Welcome to What CEOs Talk About. Do you wonder what CEOs talk about behind closed doors? How they bring their vision to reality? How do they overcome and succeed through adversity? We share that and so much more with each episode. Now, let's get started with the show.
Hello, everybody. My name is Martin Hunter. I am the host of What CEOs Talk About, where we translate vision into frontline operations. Today, my guest is got a cap, just like me. Thank you very much, Dave, for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Martin. I appreciate it. Excited to talk to you a little bit.
Fabulous. Thank you. Dave, can you give your name, serial number? What do you do, full name, and what's your current title, and what do you do for a living right now?
Yeah, definitely. Full name, David Dickert. I am the CEO of Branded Bills. I've got a couple co-founders, three of them. And we started the company about 7 years ago. Started in headwear, have expanded into apparel, but quickly grew a business that I don't think any of us thought would be a full-time role. It's kind of a side hustle for us at first. And about a year in, we quickly discovered, and there might be something to this. So over the next couple of years, we kind of transferred out of our jobs and dove in full time to Branded Bills.
Cool. For the listeners, Dave and I. So Dave, what is the title of the show? We'll put some narrative around that.
Definitely. So title of the show is going to be Build the Brand.
So it is very vanilla, but Dave and I in the pre-show, we're trying to think of cool ways to come up with a new title. But you know what? The more I think about it, building the brand is about foundational work, right? When you think about it, it's all about just keeping it simple. What's the value flow to the customer? So instead of going with a fancy marketing title, I think Build a Brand kind of fits very well on what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, and it's really been something that I think has resonated for Branded Bills through the process. There's a lot of opportunity to, take in revenue that may steer away from that a little bit. Mm. And when we're always thinking about, hey, are we building the brand? Is this something that we want to keep close to our core? Is this something that resonates with our customers? It's a good kind of, data point or something to focus on and ask that question. As we continue to build the business is this building the brand? Because at the end of the day, you need to have a strong brand to continue to be successful. And it's something that's been great for us.
Absolutely. We'll dive into that. Dave, can you tell us your story? I think it's important for the listeners to know the context of who is speaking. So can you tell us, where were you born? Where'd you grow up? Kind of parents and all that good stuff. So kind of tell us your journey until all the way up to Branded Bills.
Yeah, absolutely. Grew up in Arizona. Funny enough, it's, two of my co-founders, we all went to high school together, grew up together.
No way.
So kind of, comes full circle, but, was an athlete growing up. So busy playing sports. After I graduated high school, didn't really know what I wanted to do. So ended up in Southern California. We had visited out there on vacations and stuff, and always enjoyed it out there. And, eventually got into the restaurant business. Worked my way up through there, eventually started managing, went out on my own, got some arrows in the back, attempting my life in the restaurant business. But a lot of valuable lessons. I think every bit of that journey has kind of shaped the success that all of us have had here at Branded Bills now. Mm-hmm. And so I was in the restaurants in 2016, and the guys out here in Arizona were kicking around this idea of Branded Bills. We started to put it together, and about a year later, I was moving out here to join the team and go full time with this. So it's been great. And like I said, two of the guys I went to high school with, the last one was the younger brother of a roommate I had in San Diego. So it's kind of interesting the way all this came together. Four guys that know nothing about headwear, and I'd say probably aren't the most stylish, put together an apparel company, and we're off and running since then.
So tell me, what convinced you, right? So so you've gone through the restaurant business, you're in there, you're kind of, I don't want to say comfortable, but right? And oftentimes it's hard to leave something that, no matter how painful, like, you know, you're pulling the arrows out of your back.
Yeah.
What was the convincing conversation? What was the initial conversation that planted the seed saying, you know what, let me consider that? And then the second question would be, when did you go, all right, enough is enough, I'm done with the restaurant business?
Yeah, so I think it was a couple things. Like I said, when we started out, hey, this will be a fun thing to do on the side. We'll see how it goes. And, you know, we all started out putting out in $1,000. So $4,000 to start the company. And we are purely, you know, bakery model where sell a cookie, buy ingredients, make two more. And that's what we were kind of doing. And we were able to do that and fund ourselves quickly and grow that customer base. You know, this was 2016 when you could reach a lot more customers through advertising and there's a lot more opportunity there. But, you know, there was also a lot of competition out there in headwear and we were having success. So I think, you know, I had opened the last restaurant maybe a year before we started this and my hours were insane. And I think, you know, in the restaurant business, you make a lot of friends, not a lot of money. And I had recently gotten married and my wife's kind of going, all right, you know, what's the plan here? And so I think continuing that life would have been very difficult. The restaurant business is tough. But when we started to have success in branded bills, that's when I could go like, all right, there may be something here. Let's continue to look at this as an option. And I think when we were about a year in and kind of reaching a point where, all right, we're going to need to move into a warehouse because we're in a hot garage. This isn't sustainable. Mm. We're going to need to start hiring employees. And once it reached that point, I mean, for me personally, it was like, man, I don't want to be left behind on this thing. Like we're growing. If I'm in California, I want to be a part of this business. Can I continue to maintain that from afar? And I didn't really feel like I could. So that's where, you know, it kind of made a deal with the wife. We would travel for 4 months, one abroad. And when we came back, I was taking her to Arizona. So she had, you know, she's from the Northwest, from California. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the compromise. We'll go travel, but we're going to Arizona. We're going to be selling hats. So giddy up.
And there is a place where you need a hat. Arizona with the sunshine out there is. So out of the four guys, you're the CEO, correct?
Yeah.
Did you guys draw shorts? So this is a conversation that I love having is, okay, you got four people that come up and they share a beautiful idea. And at a certain point, you're like, okay, one founder, two founders, three, four is quite rare to see that many, you know, founders put together in this situation. And you guys have been at this for how long now?
7 years.
7 years. I mean, that is, in my books, that's a record because it's been, you lose a lot of partners along the way because the values change and all that good stuff. So tell us, when you guys first kind of started off officially, not at the first startup, but when you guys got really seriously and you moved back to Arizona, why are you the CEO?
I would say there wasn't a drawing of straws or putting titles on a board or anything like that. Fortunately for us, everybody kind of fell in to a category or department or role that they were naturally strong in. So I think, you know, for me starting off, it was, man, I'd been managing people for a long time, you know, had done some, you know, restaurant business for myself. So there was never a, hey, you are this, you are that, this is what we're going to do. It just kind of evolved that way. And fortunately for us, it allowed us to be able to grow, do a lot of different things without having to bring on employees right away. You know, so like where some people are like, oh, there's only one founder, I'm going, that's great, but like I can't imagine doing this by myself. Like I've got three other guys I can depend on. And fortunately, like we've been able to jive and it's important for us, you know, going back to 7 years, how have you guys been able to do it? Every year we kind of take a temperature check. We go up Sedona. It's an unwind. Where's everybody at? What do you want to be doing in the next year? Are you liking it? Like, where are we feeling? And, you know, this past year, one of the guys who was in Phoenix is like, hey, you know, I'm wanting to move to Tucson. So it's like, great. Let's start to plan that out, figure out what that looks like. Mm-hmm. He made the move probably about 2 months ago. And it's been a seamless transition because we knew it was coming. There was no surprises. The four of us are on the same page. So I think that's kind of critical for for partners is always, hey, where are you at? How are you feeling? What's going on? Because I mean, otherwise you've got four guys with different priorities and different directions and things can get ugly quick, but we're always kind of, you know, checking in with each other to make sure, hey, business is priority. What do we need to do to maintain the business, but also your personal life? And, you know, those things continue to evolve.
I always say there's a couple of things I want to unpack there. I always say, you know, most companies say, oh, people first. I get that people come first, but without a boat, there's no people that can survive. So the business should always come first. And I'm not saying money, that's different. It's saying business first does not mean that we're putting money first. It means that we are making sure that the ship is nice and tidy, everything's there, because without ship, there's no people. Without people, there's no culture. So you can say whatever you want, but you have to put the business first. And when you do that, and you respect the people within it, within the economics that you have, that's the beauty that you have created. And regardless if you're partners or not, I think just being kind to people and realizing, wow, you've started up with me. There's values in that, right?
Yeah, just to expand on that too, I think it's, you know, it always hasn't been like, oh, it's been easy. We always agreed on everything, right? But kind of driving home that like core idea of, hey, you're looking out for the business. I'm looking out for this is coming from nowhere else. It's not personal. It's correct. Business is first. And I think that kind of takes away a lot of the emotion. If everybody can just go, okay, number one, we don't have any egos. Number two, as long as everybody's coming from a place that this is for the business, why can you be mad about it? Like, this is great. I mean, they're suggesting things. They're not going like, oh, personally, I want to go out and do this, or I want to do this for a title or anything else. It's no, I'm suggesting this because it's for the business, and it kind of diffuses any situations, because you're like, everybody's allowed to have ideas for the business. And it's not a personal attack. It's just like, hey, he's looking out for it just like I am.
The best thing that you've said in there is check your egos. I think too many people, especially as founders, they go, well, I want to go this way and you want to go that way. Well, is it that you want to go there, or is that what the business needs? And when you're truly checking your egos at the door, there's a lot of value in that. I think the second thing, and I don't know if you guys do that, but I always suggest to, when there's more than one, well, even one founder, is salary and dividends. That's critical in regards to paying you fair market value for that salary, so that if you do decide to leave or take a break, you can still be a founder, but in a different job. And that, I think, is very different, right? So your job is the CEO, but I don't know if you guys are getting dividends or you do shareholder returns or whatever, but it you need to keep those two things very distinct for the betterment of the business and for human beings as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's important to look at like, okay, what is fair market value for what somebody's doing, you know, and to be able to always gauge that, because there's equity and there's, you know, in quotes, your employment for the company. Mm-hmm. So let's keep those things separate. And, you know, we've been able to do a good job with that. I mean, it really is. We've had growing pains, but to be 7 years in and all kind of like still marching ahead on the same page and be able to go after things is exciting. You know, there's never been the, I don't know if I can do this with these guys anymore. You know, there's been rough days.
It's amazing.
Oh, it is.
Amazing. I deal with a lot of businesses. Sorry for interrupting. I deal with a lot of businesses. 7 years with four partners. You're the only one that I know, in all honesty.
Yeah. And so, and to that, I think like we've had the foresight into like, okay, when things get a little shaky, checking ourselves, like, are we the right people for this position?
Oh, and that's absolutely.
So 2 years ago, you know, we were kind of at a critical point and somebody suggested bringing in a EOS integrator, right? Mm-hmm. And that's been huge for us, just the structure of the business, how, you know, taking a hard look at like, man, why are you in three different seats and you suck at two of them? You know, and so like that's where, you know, I would say maybe if we kept going by ourselves, we wouldn't be in this position, but we at least say like, hey, we're getting to a point we could use some help in structuring the business or bring these questions out. And so, you know, getting that org chart lined out, being able to see, all right, I know you want to do this, but are you the best person for that?
Correct.
And again, we've had those conversations amongst the four of us, and yeah, I'm not. Like, let me get out of there. Okay, great. Who do we need to hire or promote internally to make that change? And so that's part of that success, is implementing that EOS into the business.
Yeah, EOS, I mean, for us, EOS is the latest. They're scaling up Rockefeller Habits. Whatever system you want to use, EOS is fairly simple. We use EOS as well. And so, you know, who's the visionary? Who's the integrator? Again, we're not saying EOS is the end-all, be-all. There's Kaizen. There's different methodology that approach. But regardless of what you do, is ensuring that you have functional accountability and process accountability. Everybody knows when shit hits the fan, and if there's a disagreement, we've agreed that Dave, as the CEO, has the last say. We've all agreed to that. Okay, well, Dave is the CEO, and, you know, there's, you know, 50-50 draw. Two people think want to do this way. Two people want to do this way. You know, Dave's got the final kind of point on the board, and that's okay. You know, if and owning the decisions is critical as owning. Sorry, I shouldn't say that like that. Owning what decisions you have and what you leave to your other partners is not messing in somebody else's, you know, courtyard.
Yeah, and that's, you know, personally, that's probably been the biggest challenge for me, is four founders. We're all coming up together, all have equal equity.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's, you know, hey, you're kind of being put here. That's the natural progression.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now act like it, and trying to find that balance of like, man, I'm not trying to put my integrator CEO hat on, but I need to make a call here. And so, but even that, like, it's been conversations with the guys like, hey, I'm going to start pushing harder, or remember, like, this is the seat I'm in. So that's the role I'm taking right now. When we get out and we hang out, like, it's not the deal. We're friends. But like right now I need to make this call or act, in this way to get things continuing to move. And that, you know, I mean, that I've had numerous conversations with people just trying to get comfortable with that, because it's tough. You've got four buddies, you're all equal, and now you're the one kind of driving the train a little bit, or being the pushback. But I mean, at the same time, they do it to me, which is keeps everybody in balance. So it's great.
Absolutely. And that takes us to what's the most critical path. And I think what you guys have done really well, and the title of the show is Building the Brand, is from what you're telling me, all four of you are really engaged in what is best for your company, right? So why did you choose this title? Why is it important to you?
You know, so early on, it was, you know, going back to how we started. Sam was working he was part owner in a brewery in South Dakota. He's a creative marketing guy. So he wanted to come up with something unique for the business, for the brewery. So cut out a piece of leather in the shape of South Dakota, use his brand of the brewery on there, hand sewed it on. All right. So that's the first branded builds, right? And so the guys down here bought it, came down, everybody loved it. Wanted to know if we had other states, any of that stuff. So it was like, okay, maybe there's something there. Let's do Arizona with brand bills. And so, you know, let's say 6 months in, maybe we're looking like, okay, somebody can cut out leather. Somebody can sew it to a patch. What's going to make us different? And so we started putting our BBs on the hat, which is brand bills. And from that moment on, anything that goes out the door has a BB on it. And so that's been critical. We've passed on a lot of big business because they're like, oh, we don't want the BB. We don't want that. And it's like, no, we're owning that. We've developed a process. We create a quality hat, quality patches that now come together to create a branded Bills product. We're going to own that. And we're just not going to do it for somebody else. We're not going to be a manufacturer. We're not going to be just an embroidery screen print shop. This is branded Bills. And the reason you're reaching out to us, because you notice the quality of the headwear, the quality of the patch, quality of the application, all that stuff. So that's where really building the brand comes into, is that we could have accepted orders and lost that brand. But over time, people associated the BB with the quality. And now we have a lot more people reaching out to us because, you know, initially they'd be like, we don't want the BB. And now they're going like, oh, I want my business to be associated with the BB because I know what you guys stand for, the quality that BB stands for. So when we go back to building the brand, it, you know, it's around that. It's like, okay, are we developing products that continue on that journey? Are we improving the patches? Are we improving the headwear so that when people, we launch something new, we've got some new products coming out in the fall. We want people to have confidence. If it's got a BB on it, I know what's to come. Mm-hmm. I know what it's going to be. And that's where brand comes in, right? It's like, we just rolled something out and there wasn't a brand behind it. Nobody would know what to expect. But you build that expectation, deliver on it, and people continue to buy into your brand.
It's what a lot of people tend to forget about the brand. It's what you say no to that actually builds your brand. A lot of people tend to forget. It's not what you are, it's what you're not. And yeah. When I think of a house, you know, I where I grew up on the East Coast, there are small little houses, you know, by the Atlantic Ocean. And you look at the houses, and they are super simple. And you look at a simple farmhouse, right? Square house with a porch around it, and you see a tree beside it. You look at that house, you go, holy shit, that's pretty. Right? It's the environment. You know that the house in there is cozy. You know that something good is in there. When you look at a modern house, and I'm not saying anything about modern architecture, anything like that. You look at the house, you go, oh, wow, it's a feat of architecture. But you don't necessarily associate quality or good living with that house, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah, I agree with you. So I was just in, you know, Bellingham last week on vacation, and comparing the houses there, you know, they're older houses, mm-hmm. each one's unique, correct. Right? Compared to Arizona, we have a lot of track housing, mm. where it's like, hey, great big houses, but like, I don't know which one's mine. And so it's like,
if you're drunk, you might ring the wrong doorbell to get in.
Be careful. Right. And so that's kind of going back is like, how do you separate or, you know, each of those houses has a brand, has a feeling, has a look, and somebody's going to resonate with that and have feelings associated with that house. Now, does somebody have feelings associated with her house here? Yeah, of course. But I think it's a little bit different. Or if somebody can, you know, see that branded builds, know what the brand stands for, and it resonates with them with like, oh, I was wearing my branded builds on a trip, mm-hmm. or I picked that up on a golf trip, or man, when, you know, I was out with my kids playing, that was my favorite hat. And that's what we're trying to do is kind of connect people to those, you know, whether it's a journey or those experiences, mm-hmm. through our apparel, where it's going like, and that's where the state stuff kind of came from, right? Is like, okay, now you've got the brand. Now, how are we making them remember the brand, and what does the brand remind them of?
Correct. Correct. Absolutely. People tend to forget that when we purchase something, we do experiential or purchasing for our future selves, right? I'm going to buy these running shoes because they're better for my knees. They're better for, I'll be able to hike longer. I'll be able to do this longer. When you wear a hat, for me, I wear hats all the time. I got a collection of hats. When I shaved my head, I needed to replace the cool. So I actually think of what hat am I going to wear during which interview for the benefit of, you know, sponsorship, about what do we want to talk about? Who do we want to talk about? It is so important that you attach yourself to the, or it is important to understand that your brand is attached to an emotion.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, even going back to the running shoes you're going to purchase. Mm-hmm. Okay. Why are you going to purchase those? Well, I've heard it from a couple of buddies. They've confirmed it's good. I saw it. I've looked into it. I believe in it. Now I've tested it and I know, man, that thing went on X amount of hikes or X mm-hmm. amount of miles on me. Like, I believe in that product, you know? And it is. I mean, you're going to have the same reaction if you go out there and a mile in, those things fall apart. You're not going to like that. You're going to be emotionally detached from it and never want to touch it again. So it is. I mean, people, you know, especially now, it's stuff's getting more expensive. And it's all right. What are, you know, where is the value in the product? And that's something we have really looked at, especially over the last year, is as our costs have significantly gone up, mm-hmm. is, okay, are we going to ride this out? Or do we want to try to increase to maintain margin right away? And we went the route of like, we're going to maintain our prices. We're going to absorb the cost because We're in it for the long play. Mm. We want to retain the customer. We don't want them coming in the first time they discover branded bills to be like sticker shock. That's insane. And we've lost that customer forever when possibly a year or two from now, we're able to get better pricing and our prices come down. So, you know, that's kind of the route we've taken, but somebody's going to spend. I mean, I go into the warehouse all the time. I was like, guys, somebody's spent their money on this. If you are receiving this, are you excited about the way it looks or the way it's packaged, everything about it? Because you're delivering this. Pretend you're going to hand deliver this to a person. Are you proud of what you're putting out there? And it's critical because, I mean, people, you know, they've got a lot of options. They can spend their money a lot of different places. And so when they spend the money, they receive it. Do they feel like the value is there?
Dude, that is absolutely beautiful. I say this all the time. You go to France, you go to Japan, people have been bakers, right? In Europe, you go to France, he was a baker, his father was a baker, his grandfather was a baker. So they take pride in what they do. A lot of consumerism is not based on that. I love what you're saying. Hey, listen, if I had to hand deliver this to Texas, to Jim in Texas and say, hey, I made this hat, or I work at the warehouse, you know, I package this. Shit, that's very powerful. That's a very, very powerful mindset in regards to, hey, own the brand, live the brand, deliver the brand. I think that's absolutely gorgeous what you guys are saying.
Yeah. And, you know, so like even we have a big custom department for businesses that want to, decorate their hats. So eventually people were like, hey, love the branded bill stuff, state stuff. Can I put my logo on there? And so we, you know, started doing that stuff, taking those orders. Now it's, you know, good part of the business. But even to that, there's multiple steps within that to get an order out the door. Somebody's got to take the sale. Somebody's got to put together production, all that. Each step they're signing off on that, you know, it's a quality control, but also of like, hey, let's take some pride in what we're doing and what we're putting out here, because it's not, hey, I'm going to hide behind branded bills and, you know, not take responsibility for what I'm doing. No, like everybody's going to take responsibility, good and bad, for the product that we're putting out. You know,
so we flip businesses, right? That's what we do. Urgio, my company, is we flip businesses, right? So we'll buy businesses. We'll roll them up. We'll put them in a cooperative, a collective, and then we sell them up. A lot of guys come up, and even sometimes when they decide not to, or they just want to be liberated, and say, hey, I don't want to sell. I just don't want to I want to retire. I don't want to run the company forever. And I go, I got a quality issue. I say, well, okay, well, can you build a process for me for quality? And I'll say, well, what's your culture like? I'm like, what does culture have to do with quality? Well, I can put all the paperwork in, I can put all the systems in place. If somebody looks at a hat and there's a thread coming out and they just kind of go, oh shit, I'll just throw it in there. Just because you have a standard operating procedure doesn't mean that they're going to follow it. If the mindset is and supported to nothing leaves if there's a thread that comes, I don't know, I'm just kind of spitballing here, but if there's a thread that's coming out, no, it gets in the reject pile. We understand, we do, you know, why did that come through? Because that, you know, I'll take Under Armour. I love their t-shirts, their Heat Gear. I've had t-shirts forever. Every time I buy an Under Armour hat, I'm so disappointed. The elastic never fits. I sweat in it. It stretches out. It's not good at all. The t-shirts are great, but then they lose my business because they say, well, I know that regardless of what they're going to come up with, I know that Under Armour always stretches. They've lost me as a sale, right? And so, but their t-shirts are still good. So I'm not throwing Under Armour completely under the bus. They just, one department is not good. What you guys are doing is, I want to come back to the no. Under Armour is ginormous. You're saying, no, I'm not ready and willing to sacrifice my quality because I can't afford to produce, you know, 2 million hats a year or whatever it is. You can, but I don't know if that's a big number or not, but you get my point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's been, it hasn't been an operational issue. It's been purely the long play. Like we could pull that in, but then what makes our hats different, right? So you say yes to one of those guys and you're like, okay, and I'm going to take a $200,000 PO and not put our BB on there. Well, now there's a bunch of hats mm-hmm. that you put in the work for that you don't get recognition for. And, you know, some people, you know, that there's two models. Like, there's a ton of people that do that, but we didn't want to be that. Mm-hmm. That's not Brandon Bills. Brandon Bills wanted to own the brand and be, you know, taking responsibility for every quality product we put out there. So, you know, having that QC in place and having the, you know, employees take ownership of that has even gone, you know, one step further, where we had, I mean, I think it's like 20 employees now have tattooed the BB Holy logo shit. On themselves. So it's like, you know, we're trying to build this culture, make sure it's family, everything, like be the brand, build the brand. Yeah. Whoa. You're gonna tattoo that? Okay, here we go. So, I mean, two different occasions, employees have gone down there, and it's so cool to see, because, I mean, I wasn't ready to do it, and they're going, man, this company has changed my life, or I am so happy working here, I'm willing to put the logo
on your body. Yeah, and that's
so, yeah, and so it you know, and it's been really cool to see employees that came in maybe as an hourly position years ago, buying houses or being able to take their family all-inclusive vacation, where a couple years ago, you know, I don't think that would have been part of their wildest dreams. And they get back, you know, how was it? And they're just kind of like, I can't believe we just did that. I can't believe I was able to buy a house. And that's what's really cool for us as founders, is going like, okay, you know, the business is progressing, but the people we're bringing in, they're making life changes. They're able to do things that they never thought they'd be able to do. And Brandon Bills is a little bit a part of that. But more importantly, they're a huge part of what we're able to do at Brandon Bills.
It's people tend to associate, and I just want to, the brand is the sticker that is a window to the culture, in my opinion, right? The back in the olden days, I love shipping kind of, when you were on a ship, there was a certain culture associated with a ship in the 1700s, right? You went with the Bounty. You went with the Mystery. You went with a different boat. There was a culture associated with that boat that say, I want to be part of that. And that Branded Bills, the BB, is only just a window, you know, a stained glass into which you peer into the quality of service, the quality of delivery, the quality. And I, Dave, I'm so happy that you're doing that, because more companies need to think with this prosperous mindset. I have a craft. Whatever your craft is, just do the best that you can at doing that, and stop thinking that you're going to make, you know, gajillions amount of money. Just do the best hat that you can. And once you focus on that and quality and treating people with dignity and respect, the world is your oyster. People want to buy that. People want to participate that. At a certain time, somebody's going to want to say, hey, I want to buy Branded Bills. And you're going to have the toughest decision of your life in saying, do I want to accept $350 million for what I've built? Right? Because now you have to have a price tag attached to that. And it will happen. Yep. If you are still on that trajectory, that will happen. Now, if you say yes or no, it's, you know, you and your partner's decision. But that, then you're going to have, you know, are we ready and willing to let go of our quality because of this opportunity, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, it's interesting when you say, like, okay, you've got the brand and then a window into the culture. The power of that is the people that then you're able to attract to add to that, right? So it's like, people see the brand, they kind of hear about the culture. Now you're able to attract someone because they want to be a part of that. And maybe they, you know, they're willing to take a little bit less money or the schedule isn't exactly what they want, but they're going like, man, I see the potential. I want to grow with this company. I'm going to join them. Now on the flip side, you get a lot of people that want to join the company that may not be a good fit for that. So for us, it's protecting it and making sure employees and we have things in place that are going like, you know, if this person isn't a fit, we're moving quickly to move them out of the organization so they don't ruin what we've built. And I think that's been just as important as being able to attract the right people, is being able to weed out the ones that aren't a good fit. And our employees have been great at helping us protect that as well.
Saying no is the biggest thing. I say this all the time, and they've got a list of applicants. Some people say, well, I'll pick a trade. I need plumbers. I'll pick any plumber. Well, that's the wrong idea. I'd rather you say no to work than pick the wrong plumber, right? You always hire for attitude, skill, knowledge, and experience in that order. Attitude first. If they don't mean the core values, we take super long to hire anybody at our company, Urgio. And we tell them at the first, hey, listen, we like you, but you know, and it's going to take at least 30 days before you're employed with us. And they're like, 30 days? Yeah, you're going to talk to everybody. Everybody within my company gives you a thumbs up. If there is one thumbs down, we're like, okay, why'd you give a thumbs down? I don't know. And then we dive into that, right? But when that person is hired, everybody, regardless of rank, right? Either your project manager or you're me, the managing partner. If there's a thumbs down, we're like, okay, there's no hire until we get either that thumbs up or we go, you know, 25 out of 26, that's no pass. You have to have 100%.
Yep. And even going back to what you're saying, that, you know, the power of no is we've had those acquisition, you know, opportunities come through. And for us, we're looking at who is the partner, what is the possibility, are they branded bills, right? Because like, we don't want to just, hey, wipe our hands clean, go away, and branded bills is completely ruined. It's, there's an opportunity for a cash out, and man, that would be nice. But are we there yet? I don't think we are. And number two, do they fit branded bills? It's a partner. It's an employee, however you want to look at it. You're bringing them into the organization. So do they hold the same values that we do? And do we believe they're going to take branded bills to the same place we want to go? And so like, you know, that's another part of that saying no is until we're ready, obviously. But then once we are, making sure we're integrating with a company that holds those values.
What was the hardest no that you've had to do to, I'll say, not build, but protect the brand, or that wasn't aligned? What's the biggest decision where it went like maybe back and forth between you and your partners and your team? What was the biggest decision?
Man, I would say the hardest decision in protecting the brand probably goes back to when we were starting. There were originally five of us.
Oh.
And so, very early on, we realized four are on a different page than one. Mm. And so to go through that, and I mean, it was, you know, somebody that we knew and we knew very well, but did everything we could to make it a smooth transition. But I mean, that was probably a big one, because the four of us were rolling. Mm. We were on one page, and it wasn't going to continue to work that way with that last partner. And so we had to make a decision to correct that. And it was very hard, but I think that really probably changed the way we were able to run and the speed and what we were able to do. So that's where, hey, protecting the business, right? We're going into this with partners. Hey, the business is going to be the thing that we're going to make decisions for. And that's probably the hardest part is drawing that line and making sure everybody's on the same page with it. But I think that was the hardest no, is like, no, this isn't going to continue to work. We need to make a change.
What do you think is your biggest obstacle to come? What's on your radar as the CEO and saying, oh shit, I see the storm. We might be able to miss it, but what are you worried about?
Retention. So both customers and employees.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's highly competitive out there. So as you're building a good business, people want to poach the quality people you have working for you. So that's number one, is how do we continue to maintain the value of branded bills, continue to show people the path to success so they want to maintain their employment here, continue working with us. On the customer side, acquisition has gotten very expensive, a lot harder with iOS rollouts. So it is What are we doing to make sure the customer wants to stay with us? Are we servicing them? Are we listening to feedback? Mm-hmm. You know, for us, that's been part of our success is going, hey, what do you guys want? What mm-hmm. do you think of this product? Listening to the feedback and making changes so the customer feels heard. So now more than ever that we've built mm-hmm. this large customer base, it is, you know, how do we retain them? How do we continue to show value and keep them within the brand? And then I think supply chain yeah. is still the great unknown. It's gotten better for us, but we've kind of gone through a period of last year where we didn't have a lot of hats. Our lead time went from 4 months to 9 months to 11 months. Now it's shaving way back down. So we're receiving more inventory than we anticipated getting. But now is 4 month the new norm or does something else come up? So it's, you know, their first 6 years of business, 5 years of business, we didn't really have that mm-hmm. strain. And so now it's, okay, I need to make sure that I've got products coming in. I'm maintaining my employees and maintaining my customers. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a little bit of a juggling act, but we bring on the right people to do that stuff. And that's huge for us is going like, okay, I'm not the guy to make sure customers are happy. Let's bring in somebody that is a rock star at that. And they're focused on that. Okay. Who's going to focus on supply chain? Boom, done. Focus on that. So fortunately we're in a position now that we can do that. But those are probably the three for me is just, you know, retention of employees, customers, and supply chain.
We advocate for risk management a lot. Before COVID, nobody did risk management. Only the big corporations, right? People, environment, assets, reputation. Now that COVID hit, now everybody's listening. We have six pillars in business, and the last pillar is risk management. And I think that too little people understood the value of planning for dark, dreary days. And that's why a lot of even big companies, they're stretched too thin. I mean, I know a lot of large investors that went down because they were stretched too thin, right? They didn't have a prosperous mindset for how do I retain employees when it's dark and dreary, when I can't get my stuff, right? The quality comes first. And I love what you're saying because the quality of living, the quality of employees, the quality of a product, I'd rather say no to a big purchase. So for example, we've capped our company at 27, including me. That's it. Whatever we can generate at 80% billable rate, that we've capped it at that. And because we do not want, as an organization, we do not want to go above and beyond and be in the position where work is always number one. Work, 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 work. We want to keep on. Our third core value is well-grounded. So if you don't understand, don't get me wrong, there's days where, you know, we have to do overtime and stuff like that when there's a project due, but it's not consistent, right? Is over, you know, a quarter, have I taken some time off? Have I been able to go fishing? Was I able to play rugby with my kids? Whatever. But we need to, so I think it's important that a lot of, I like what you're thinking about because that forward thinking is risk management. Okay, what happens if? What happens if? Do I have 120 days now in the bank to make sure that my payroll comes out? Too many people were, you know, month to month. Oh, it's okay. I got plenty of sales. Boof. You know, March 19th, bing, zero sales. Okay, how do I move forward now, right?
Yeah. And, you know, and I think it really, for us, it was a learning lesson. And fortunately, D2C went absolutely crazy through COVID. So we were in a good position, but it kind of showed us, all right, how do we stress test the business with these different things, you know, okay, scenarios of if this doesn't happen. So where we used to be reliant on one factory, now we've onboarded three or four. So like, you can, you know, pull those levers and it's kind of the backup plan for every scenario that you can build out. So when those situations come up, they're not going to be easy, but you at least have a game plan that you can start to follow rather than ad hoc trying to put it together. And, you know, you're falling down the hill trying to catch something where you may have had a plan before that. And so we're not there yet by any means, but it's kind of shown us, all right, here's the things we need to be thinking about, or at least bring to the table to have a plan or be thinking about, even if it's not solidified, it's on the radar.
Business continuity is always better than emergency response, in my opinion, right? Yeah. How do you plan to not get the flood versus having to sandbag a whole bunch of houses? Like people, that's what I say all the time. Okay, how do you do dike management, water flow? I'm not saying that it's not going to flood, but how do you mitigate and manage that so that you're not having to throw sandbags around each house when a flood's coming? Anyways, there's just so many analogies, right?
Well, yeah, and I think that's where, you know, coming back to, you know, who's your leadership team? Who are you surrounding yourself with? Because I can't do it by myself. They can't do it by themselves. But like, do I feel like when I look around, all right, no matter what comes our way, we'll figure it out. And right now I do. You know, it's like, all right, for anything coming in, when we got to go to battle or there's, you know, the boat sinking, I've got at least 8 people around here with big old buckets that are going to be, you know, bailing like crazy. And that, I mean, that's all you can do is continue to look at that team and kind of feel like, okay, we're in a good place. Or like, these are the people that are going to go to battle with me, and then layer down from there. And, you know, it kind of gives that confidence of like, hey, things are going to come up, but if they do, collectively, we'll be able to figure it out.
What is the reference of choice for you? What is the book, the movie that you refer to continuously? What's on your nightstand or in the back of your head when it comes time to leadership, building your brand, your company? What's the go-to thing that you always refer back to?
I think, and I don't know exactly where it's from, but I heard it somewhere, and it was kind of, you're the basic of it is you're in control of this, right? So if you're in a movie, you're the writer, the director, the star. If things aren't going well, change it. You have the ability to change it. Like you own all those pieces. I don't like the, you get dealt a bad card or hiccups come up in life, but like, you're not stuck. Mm-hmm. That's not a permanent sentence. So what, you know, with business, with personal, whatever it may be, you know, what are you doing to change the outcome or the plot of your personal movie? And I just kind of like that idea because it gets you out of the like, the world's against me. I, you know, for me attitude. And it's like, no, it's not over. The thing's still going for another 40 years. Change it, make a move, you know? And then I think on the entrepreneurial side, somebody told me, hey, man, you chose this. Like, you know, you're the one that's doing it. You know, you could be working for somebody else. You could be doing something else, but like, you're in it. So like, dive in and enjoy it. Cause it is, I mean, at the end of the day, all of us sit around, we're like, man, last 2 years have been tough, but I cannot imagine doing this for anybody else. And so I think it's kind of critical, man. You chose this and you have the ability to change it. So those two things kind of resonate with me.
I'm in a dilemma of writing either a marketing book, which is what CEOs talk about, or writing a legacy book, which is Embrace the Ox. I love to be useful. And so I'm at a point in my life where I'm detached from my business. I've been able to build a business enough where I can show up or not show up and it doesn't make a difference. Well, hopefully it makes a little bit of a difference, but I'm completely.
Well, and just real quick on that, Martin. So like I was gone for the last week and, you know, I intentionally unplugged. I was like, I'm going to do this. So one, it was great for me to be able to do it because coming in Monday morning today, I'm like clear, ready to get into it. Two, reality check. You're not needed. You're not as important as you think you are.
I agree.
Right? Like the show goes on. So like just, hey, there's value there, but like keep that in mind. I mean, it's both ways, like you said, like a little bit of value, but like, hey, don't get caught up. No ego,
absolutely.
Right?
And so the legacy book is really about Embrace the Ox. I love to be useful. I love going out to the field and plowing and working. So don't try to reinvent yourself when you're at that point. Okay, I love hard work. Okay, so find another field to plow that you're choosing, because that exactly, you chose this because this is what you are. And instead of trying to be something else or somebody else, just do what you do best and what you love at it. And I love to be useful and working hard. So even if you're in a different mindset or a different place, just embrace it. But I want to finish with this. It's whatever brand you have, it's not just about company. For me, my journey is now I have to find my brand. What do I stand for? And I'll tell you something. Doing it for a product or a service is a lot easier than doing it for yourself. So it is difficult.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, you can talk about very easily when creating a physical product or a SaaS or something, but now turn that same methodology on yourself and it's a gut check, you know? It's like, okay, what is your brand? What do you represent? Like you've been able to build this thing that sounds good, but you know, what do people exactly say about your brand? That's an interesting one. And that, you know, when you go into legacy and everything else, people will say, hey, Brandon builds, but Dave was this.
Exactly.
What is this? You know, and that's the interesting part. And just real quick on your, you know, intentionality on building the company. When you started, was that the intention to be able to be removed, or has that been an evolution of the business? Because I think that's important for people to think about, like, when they're going into something, we did it. And so now as we grow, it's something that you start to think about, like, okay, what do I want my lifestyle to be? And is this business set up to be that? Or have I put myself, chose yes to be able to do what I want to do? Okay, if not, how am I going to change?
It's funny you should ask that, because I went through that a few months ago. And initially, when I built a solo practice, my wife said, you're gonna work till about 30 minutes before you die. That's just who you are. And so I said, okay, great. But as the demand grew more and more, I brought a team in and everything. And I think that the embrace the ox is where I'm feeling it, where I'm going, business is not me. And at first I thought the business was me and I was part of the business, and it's very intertwined and very locked in. I came to realize that the business did not need me, but if I wanted to keep on working till 30 minutes before I died, it would be of my choice and something different. So to say, I never thought I would be able to leave my business. When I realized that that was the journey, I did what I needed to do to surround myself and bring the people online or part of around me to be able to say, oh, I'm out. I've identified the next managing partner as well. I'm still managing partner, but in the next 10 years, we've identified the next integrator and the next chief operating officer as well. So we're there for a longer journey, but the role is so much more fun now because it is a lot more mentoring, coaching, and not dated. I shouldn't say that. I'm not as excited about day-to-day as I used to be. I've been an operator. I was in the military, mining, oil and gas, all of that. But the journey has changed now where I'm more excited about providing the team with my wisdom than my tactics.
Yep. Yeah. And that's, you know, goes back to our temp check every year in Sedona, because, you know, as we, you know, now we've got families. And so it's, you know, obviously coming from restaurants, athletics, highly competitive. I don't want to lose. I truly enjoy working. I love it. But man, like, you also, I love spending time with my kids and being able to do that and stuff. So it's like, okay, what is that balance? Because there will be some business opportunity in 18, 20 years. 18, 20 years, these guys are long gone. Yeah. They're like off into their own life, right? And so it's interesting, that personal kind of like evolution for myself of like, man, I still like, I am so ready to get in here this morning, but man, I love spending time with those kids and wife the past week. So now going into maybe, you know, next business or whatever that would be, what is my intention of the business to be able to do, you know, personally, how do I want to be able to balance it? Because I don't think any of us would go like, hey, we don't want to spend time with our family because we want to work all the time.
No.
Hopefully
the
not.
Quality comes back, right? When I was away very frequently, I was away sometimes 8 weeks at a time in Africa. And my wife would always say to me, it's not the amount, it's the quality. So when you are with your kids, be 100% with them. Don't be on your phone. Don't be doing this. Don't be doing that. You are. If you have a meeting, I'm okay with having you having a meeting. Tell the kids, tell all of us, here's so that we're talking through it. But when you're with the kids, you're talking to the kids. If the phone rings, you're not answering the goddamn phone. Yes, ma'am.
Yep. I love that. Cause again, like this was the first week mm-hmm. that I truly said, hey, I'm going to be here. Right. And it was so valuable. Wife appreciated it. I got more out of it than trying to do the 1 foot in, 1 foot out, you know, like trying to answer emails and like not, you know, getting frustrated with kids because I can't do that. And so I love that. It's the quality because, you know, both are going to require a lot of time, but, when I'm here, there's times that I, hey, won't pick up a phone call. So do the same thing exactly. for your family.
And I love that. For, as you know, as a restaurateur, your family pays the price. When you're a restaurateur, the people who have supported you, who have given you everything, are the people at home. And oftentimes we get addicted to that high pace, high velocity experience. And it's addictive. It is. At a certain point, you're like, okay, well, am I a provider or am I just a bank machine? There's a difference. You know, I should say, am I a father and not just a provider? And the father is not just there to, we're past the stone age where we have to defend people with sticks and there's no more saber-tooth tigers. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. We still have to protect our families and do the right thing as a provider. As the world has changed. So emotional support with bullying and drugs and stuff like that, being a good role model is the key to being a good father, in my opinion, as a dad or a parent, any parent.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, I just think of like, okay, how do I want my kids to remember me? Dad was always working or dad was around, you know? And I don't think they're going to go, oh, he was only around after 5 o'clock. No, they're going to be like, man, every time dad got home at 6:30, it was the most fun we had for a half hour. You know what I mean? And so like, that's just, you know, as they're getting older, it's going, holy cow, they're growing up quick. You know, how do I want to structure my day to be effective in both? Cause I definitely don't want to give up. And my whole thing has kind of been like no regrets. So I don't want 18 years ago, man, built a beautiful business. This is amazing. Didn't spend any time with my family.
And you'll see, I mean, I've got a teenage daughter now. I mean, I've got three teenage daughters, but the latest one is, I don't get to spend a lot of time with her, but she's really good at rugby. And so for us, it's practice 2 nights a week, right? So it's 2 nights a week. The rest of the time, she's TikToking, friends, mom, school. But when it's rugby time, like my wife's not allowed in the truck with us. It's like, okay, let's go to practice. Hey, what's up? What's going on? She knows. And there's times when she comes to me to talk that she doesn't want to tell her mom. So that for me is, okay, I'm having an impact on my kid because she's telling me stuff that she trusts me with. That is, and again, I'm not spending every hour. And same thing, Tracy tells me all the time, what'd you guys talk about in the truck? Nothing. You guys drove there in the silence? Yeah. Ariel, you okay with that? She goes, I love driving with dad. We just listen to music and we just don't talk. No, there's no pressure. There's no hassle. She just feels good. Yep. Right. So, anyways.
Yeah. Good stuff. Man.
All right. Dave, thank you so very much. Can we, people can reach out to you. So what is the website for Branded Bills? Brandedbills.com. Is that it?
Brandedbills.com. Be sure to check out Branded Bills Custom as well. That's for all your B2B needs. So if you've got, family event, logo, anything like that. And then golf courses have been huge for us. So if you got a local private course you're at, we'd love to get in there and provide custom headwear for that.
And you're on LinkedIn if anybody wants to reach out, correct?
I am. Yeah, connect with me there. Dave Dickert on Instagram. Check out the brand. We've got a ton of state stuff for you. It was great talking with you, Martin. I appreciate it. Valuable insight. Continue to build the brand.
Fabulous. Thank you. With that being said, my name is Martin Hunter. I'm the host of What CEOs Talk About, where we translate vision into frontline operations. With that said, please like, subscribe, and click the notification bell, and please enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.
Thanks, Martin.
Thanks for tuning in to What CEOs Talk About. Make sure to click subscribe to get notified about future episodes or check us out at www.whatceostalkabout.com.